It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I put his denial in the context of everything that I know about him in terms of how he approaches his cases. As I said, his credibility is already very questionable in my mind. When I say that he's very outcome-driven, he has an ideological agenda. It's very outcome-driven, and I can sit here and talk to you about some of the cases that exemplifies his, in my view, inability to be fair.
No matter what happens here, Judge Kavanaugh, after these proceedings, isn't going to jail. But you are taking his career. And the idea that this guy could, in fact, go back to the Court of Appeals and continue to serve after this, if he were not confirmed, I think is really unlikely.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That is, there are two huge stories this morning that I want to talk to you about. Both of them would take hours, so I'm going to do my best. And even overnight, there's so much information. I have to tell you, every morning when I wake up, I probably have an additional, from the time I go to bed till I wake up in the morning, probably another 100 email about this. So I'm trying to go through all of this and read the articles and present as clearly as I can something that's very complex. But let me just say that Brett Kavanaugh and his accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, are scheduled at this point to appear before the Judiciary Committee Thursday morning at 10 o'clock. Christine Ford's attorney, which I'm going to get in, we're learning more and more about Deborah Katz, and I'm going to get into that in a little bit too, have responded, and they made 10 demands, and I think the Senate Judiciary Committee acceded to 6 of those demands. 4 of them they did not, one of which was she demanded that it be the senators on the committee that actually question her and not attorneys that might be hired. Which, of course, would be a hip, of course. If you thought maybe, you know, those Republican senators were going to be the ones to question her, you know that that would be a disaster because they are just doddering elderly gentlemen, most of them. And they can be worked, they can be played, and we've seen that over and over again. And so that's what they're cleverly requesting, that it be those gentlemen that question. And, of course, look at the other side. We've got Spartacus and Kamala Harris and all the others who are loaded for bear, who don't have any trouble. They will go after Judge Kavanaugh in an unbelievable way. I just really dread it. I don't know about the rest of you, but I do. But of course, Deborah Katz, the attorney, wrote back to the Judiciary Committee with a very vague first. She leads out in her, this is the big news a couple of days ago. If I'd been on the air a couple of days ago, I would have told you this. She basically said, "We accept, we'll come." Then it's a very long, then a very large but, and they talk about how badly she's been treated, how disgraceful the behavior of the Republican senators has been, and if, and of course the whole idea is to delay this so that Brett Kavanaugh cannot be placed on the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. 5 delays have been granted already to Deborah Katz and her client. 5 delays, and now Thursday is really up in the air. One of the things that came across the wire, as they used to say, was that Christine Ford was afraid to fly. But of course, we know because of her, you know, all of her social media was scrubbed. So there's a lot that's hard to find out about her. But one thing we do know is she's recently traveled to Hawaii to do some work, some lecturing. One letter, in fact, I'm going to read part of one where she says she's on vacation out on the East Coast, but she's from California. So you can see the silliness. Silly just seems too small a word. You can see the insidiousness of the lies in every way. And the left is getting away. The liars are getting away with the lies. And so why not tell more? Because they are telling more. And according to the polls, they're having great success. This is a Fox News poll that just came out a couple of days ago. And this is what it says. In the poll, people were asked, would you vote to confirm SCOTUS nominee Brett Kavanaugh? Now, 40% say yes, 50% say no. And that's down from August of 2018, where 45% said yes and 46% said no. All right, stay with me. And who do you believe? Ask the Fox News poll. Christine Ford, 36%. Brett Kavanaugh, 30%. Unsure, 34%. Democrats believe Christine Ford by 59-9 margin. Republicans by a 60% to 14% do not believe or believe Brett Kavanaugh. That's not too much of a surprise because I think people that are clued in and identifying themselves with party understand what's at stake here. It is the future of really the country in many ways constitutionally because the Supreme Court has been given so much power in the last few decades. And they are the deciders, as George W. Bush used to say. They are the final deciders. That isn't constitutional. They're supposed to be one branch of three equal branches. But because the legislative has just decided to become totally political, they want to get elected all the time, they pass off the hard decisions to the courts. And the courts have been happy to step up to the plate and decide for you. They've been happy to be the deciders. So now here we are. And we have a court that's evenly divided between those that lean conservative and those that lean to the left. And so the battle to replace this ninth vacant seat is fierce. So last question I want to share from this poll before I go on to much information for you. This is the question. Is it important to vote for a candidate who shares your view on the Kavanaugh nomination? Because after all, the 2018 midterms are coming along. How will this affect the vote? And by the way, in discussions I had with people in at the Values Voter Summit, people behind the scene, it certainly seems as though we think maybe the red state Democrats will now not vote for Kavanaugh. That means Joe Manchin, Claire McCaskill, I don't know if Claire was even considering it, Joe Donnelly. I don't know. Look, I'm not saying this for sure. I'm just saying the word is that they will follow their party's orders because they're desperate to not get him on the court. Now, how will that play out for voters? Will you care in Indiana if Joe Donnelly votes against Brett Kavanaugh, given all you know? Or those of you in West Virginia, if Joe Manchin votes against Kavanaugh because he's cooperating with delaying this? It's interesting, you know, Mazie Hirono was the person you heard in that opening clip. She is the Hawaiian senator who received the letter from Christine Ford, who claimed, you know, she wanted to be anonymous, and Mazie's the one that passed it on to Senator Feinstein, all trying to protect Mazie because she was so afraid, Christine Mazie Ford, that she would be afraid for her life. She got these threats and she was embarrassed to come out and she wasn't sure about the effect on her life. And now she's receiving death threats. You know, it's just the standard. You don't know when it's true and when it isn't because they so carelessly throw these things out. But Senator Hirono actually tipped her hand at everything. She's just delighted about this. And she's speculating we might just delay this and not allow there to be a ninth justice until the 2020 election when we could, as Democrats, man, we could choose who we want. That's basically what she's saying. And that really is the game here. All right, go back to this poll. Is it important to vote for a candidate who shares your view on the Kavanaugh nomination? For Democrats, it's extremely important by 41%. For Republicans, it's extremely important by 43%. Now, that's interesting to me. That's the only stat I'm going to give you on that. But you can see that the damage is being done to Brett Kavanaugh's reputation, no doubt about it. And, of course, the media is doing everything they can to help. Michael Moore was on with Bill Maher, and I just want you to see how this works. Clip 6.
Bill Shine is now who was the guy at Fox News
right. When
Roger Ailes was there covering on Bill O'Reilly. Now he's the advisor to Trump in the White House prepping Brett Kavanaugh, the Republican. They're always 6 degrees from sexual harassment, that part.
Yeah. It's a lot closer than just 6 degrees They believe in this. That's why they don't like this woman who's come forward, and they want to go after her now. And they've given her till tonight or something.
Right. That, ridiculous.
Well, right now, I think, when we're on the air.
Because women love ultimatums. That's what.
Yeah. Especially those who have been victimized by men. You know, nothing like saying to a potential rape victim you got till 10 o'clock.
Especially when it's
to tell us about the rape.
Yeah, so now you can see how this goes. And we've been through this. As I've said before, we just went through this with Justice Moore. But again, the Republican establishment was happy to let that happen. I think they even cooperated with it. They spread it. They loved it because they did not want him in the Senate. So it's interesting to me that what goes around comes around. Now, Judge Kavanaugh, who I can't stand to see what's happening to him. I'm not happy about this. The same thing is happening to him, and they're doing their best to defend him. But now they see what they're up against. And it's just, this is out of control. And someone has to rein it in. And I'm not sure Chuck Grassley is capable. The thing that's keeping Chuck Grassley back is Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake, the hand-picked senator from Arizona, hand-picked by John McCain. John McCain speaks from the grave again through Jeff Flake trying to stop this Trump nominee. It's just amazing. Jeff Flake is on the Judiciary Committee, and he has hinted all along and been saying behind the scenes that he might not vote in favor of the Kavanaugh, of moving forward on the Kavanaugh vote because of these allegations. And so he is the thorn in the side of Chuck Grassley, and he is the reason why the Republicans really have had to bend over backwards. It's because of him and because of Susan Collins. It's because of both of them. Now, something happened in the last 24 hours, two somethings. Well, this shouldn't be a surprise. We should have called Judge Moore and asked him how this worked for him. Because last night, another two allegations. Let's hear Brian Stetler from CNN. This is clip 10.
The headline here is that there is a second woman who is speaking publicly with accusations against Kavanaugh. The subheadline, very important here, is that it has not been corroborated to any great degree. In fact, there are people who have been named as eyewitnesses to this alleged incident who say they do not remember it. This was an incident dating back to his to the freshman year at Yale. This student says she was at a dorm room party and things got out of hand. The story is up on NewYorker.com. And it is written by Ronan Farrow and Jane Mayer, two outstanding reporters who have been on this case for a while. I know Farrow has been out in California digging into this, as have other reporters in recent days, trying to encourage this woman to speak out. Apparently, she was quite reluctant to do so, afraid to do so. But this story has been making the rounds on Capitol Hill, both among Senate Democrats and Senate Republicans. So even though we're just hearing about this now for the first time in the last few minutes, this has been out there for a while, at least for several days on Capitol Hill.
Brian Stetler, CNN. You know, I don't often say this, but I just have to say this, that in meetings in D.C., and when I saw the response of the Republican Judiciary Committee, I said to many people who had the ability to do something about this, or that this is exactly what's going to happen. It's not just going to be Christine Ford. They're going to come out with a series of accusations. Then you're going to be chasing rabbits. She said, oh, no, she's claiming. No, now she's claiming. This is the way it works. And so here it comes. Here it comes. And the idea is to delay it. Of course, if I think it's Thursday is the drop dead, I believe, the drop dead date at which Kavanaugh could be voted on in order to serve on the court in the upcoming session. And also to, and I think after that, it's just, he won't be able to be on the court if he gets confirmed until next year. So there is a lot at stake here. Need I say more about that? Now, so I'm going to go into these allegations that came out last night in more detail in just a second. But let me just say that there are three. There's Ronan Farrow and Jane Mayer, who Brian Stetler just mentioned. They have another woman. Now there's Michael Avenatti, who represented Stormy Daniels, and he is sure that he has a very credible source, another woman who has a story to tell. And then there's The New Yorker, who came out with this story of, her name is Ramirez, and that's the one that has the most information. We'll talk about that because it's a longer article. And she's accusing Brett Kavanaugh of things I can't really say quickly because it's just gross. And so they're coming after him, and they're going to ruin him. You know, even if he cannot be confirmed to the Supreme Court, they will not stop. They never stop at just stopping someone from one nomination. They don't, meaning the left, they don't stop until they're completely destroyed. And he's on a very important D.C. Circuit Court right now doing some very important things. And if they have their way, they will impeach him and get him off of that court, too. This is the way it goes. And as soon as Republicans can figure out that this is a fight for the death, we will be better off. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Good news. You are not stuck with your health care plan. Really. You have a choice, and it's a great one. It's called MediShare, and if you've heard about it and wondered what exactly it is, it's a way that people share their healthcare bills, and these are people who have a common faith, who want to be part of something beautiful that not only meets their healthcare needs, but the needs of others too. And it's people who love to save money, big time. MediShare members typically save $500 a month per family on their healthcare costs. That is a life changer for people. So this could be for you. Maybe it's what you've been looking for, a way to pay healthcare bills that's not only very smart financially, but it's even profound. MediShare is a nonprofit with 400,000 members nationwide who pray for and share with each other. So yes, you're not stuck. There's another way, and it could save you a lot. Hit *345 to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. Message and data rates may apply. That's *345.
What if I told you that you could clean your family's laundry and help reach the next generation at the same time? That opportunity is here, through a company called Redeem Clean. Every time you use Redeem Clean products, you help support the ministry of the American Family Association. In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean laundry detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. Redeem Clean products work as well as or better than other products on the market. They're environmentally safe, biodegradable, and they're made in the USA. And they were developed exclusively for the support of the American Family Association. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and order Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There's only one thing worse than the guy who mows the grass in his underpants, and that would be a guy who mows the grass without any underpants. Dateline Stewart, Florida, the good people of one neighborhood dealing with a man who does his yard work au naturel, which is French for buck naked. They've called the law, but the sheriff can't seem to figure out how to charge the guy. They suspect he's breached two statutes, lewd and lascivious behavior and breach of peace. Not to mention breach of decorum. But so far, no charges have been filed because apparently weed whacking in the buff is not a crime. For now, there's really not much the law can do, and neighbors have just told the children to look the other way. You know, it reminds me of the title of a book written by the late great Southern humorist Louis Grizzard. Don't bend over in the garden, Granny. You know them taters got eyes. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Chairman Grassley's bent over backwards to make this happen. The offer is Thursday at 10 o'clock. She made 10 conditions through her lawyer. We accepted six. We're not going to turn over to the other side how many witnesses to call. There'd be two witnesses, Dr. Ford, then Judge Kavanaugh, and we'll hire our own counsel. They contest those two things. If they continue to contest those two things, they won't be a hearing. If they really want to be heard, they can be heard in a small room with a lot of security, limited press availability. She'll be treated fairly, but we're not going to turn the hearing over to her lawyers, and we'll see. I hope she comes. I will listen if she does. Judge Kavanaugh is ready to go right now, Monday, Thursday, anytime. And here's what I tell my colleagues. This accusation has to be looked at in terms of our legal system. It's too old for a criminal trial. It's 36 years old. You couldn't bring a civil suit because you can't tell the court what time it happened and where it happened. And if you tried to get a warrant based on this, you couldn't get a warrant because the three people named by Dr. Ford as having been at the party outside of Kavanaugh all say they don't know what she's talking about. So you couldn't go to criminal trial. You couldn't sue civilly. You couldn't even get a warrant. But I will listen to what she has to say. Well, we got 11 politicians who haven't done a trial in about 20 years. I thought it'd be really smart to have somebody come in and knows what they're doing, to ask the questions, to be respectful. You know, I don't know what Dr. Ford expected us to do with an anonymous letter. If she wanted to stay anonymous, those who betrayed her need to apologize. But she will be treated respectfully, but she will be challenged, just like Judge Kavanaugh.
All right, so that was Lindsey Graham on Fox News Sunday, and he's on the Judiciary Committee, so he explained just very well, better than I did, about what's happening this Thursday. Now, overnight, in the last 24 hours, Dianne Feinstein finally released the letter to Senator Chuck Grassley, who has released it to the rest of the public. The original letter that started all of this, and I'm just going to read it to you because I think you should hear it. Confidential, it says. Senator Dianne Feinstein, I am writing with information relevant in evaluating the current nominee to the Supreme Court. As a constituent, I expect that you will maintain this as confidential until we have further opportunity to speak. Remember, she's so afraid to tell her name, to speak up. Of course, we know now that even without with her social media scrubbed, we know that this attorney, Christine Blasey Ford, is a Democratic operative, a supporter of Hillary Clinton, seen wearing that that vulgar pink hat, protesting President Trump. And so, yeah, but she doesn't really have an opinion, and this is her civic duty, right? Okay, so she says, Brett Kavanaugh physically and sexually assaulted me during high school in the early 1980s. He conducted these acts with the assistance of his close friend, Mark Judge. Both were 1 to 2 years older than me and students at a local private high school. The assault occurred in a suburban Maryland area home at a gathering that included me and four others. Kavanaugh physically pushed me into a bedroom as I was headed for a bathroom up a short stairwell from the living room. They locked the door and played loud music, precluding any successful attempts to yell for help. Kavanaugh was on top of me while laughing, with Judge, who periodically jumped onto Kavanaugh. They both laughed as Kavanaugh tried to disrobe me in their highly inebriated state. With Kavanaugh's hand over my mouth, I feared he may inadvertently kill me. From across the room, a very drunken judge said mixed words to Kavanaugh, ranging from go for it to stop. At one point, when Judge jumped onto the bed, the weight on me was substantial. The pile toppled, and the two scrapped with each other. After a few attempts to get away, I was able to take this opportune moment to get up and run across to a hallway bathroom. I locked the bathroom door behind me. Both loudly stumbled down the stairwell, at which point other persons at the house were talking with them. I exited the bathroom, ran outside of the house, and went home. And then she goes on to say, I have received medical treatment regarding the assault. Christine Blasey. There's a little bit more to it, but they're just incidental things. I just wanted you to hear the letter. This is the letter that Dianne Feinstein sat on for 2 months. And after Kavanaugh hearings took place, and we all saw those, at least a portion of them, for hours and hours and hours and hours with all the protests, all the private interviews, including with Dianne Feinstein, she never once mentioned this. And suddenly, in the 11th hour, she brings this letter out. There's no question that Dianne Feinstein is leading the charge to stop Brett Kavanaugh from being confirmed to the United States Supreme Court. We could go on and on with refuting or just questioning these claims by Christine Blasey. The account about how many were in the House has been disputed by her. The first time she says she spoke about it was in 2012 in a counseling session, and the counselor's notes do not comport with her notes, her recollection of it, even in that counseling session. And none of the four people in that house seem to remember anything about that. She doesn't remember what house, where it was. She's a little fuzzy on it. It's an amazing, amazing story. Okay, so now, as of yesterday, I told you that other people are coming out, including Michael Avenatti, who, you know, the trustworthy attorney who represents Stormy Daniels and wants to be president. He says he has knowledge that Kavanaugh and a high school friend, Mark Judge, targeted women with drugs and alcohol in order to allow a train of men to subsequently gang rape them. So that's Michael Avenatti's story in part, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it. Then Ronan Farrow and Jane Maher just came out with another piece in which they say there's another woman, and it has come to my attention that Jane Maher came, actually, we can make this personal, to American Family Association headquarters in Tupelo and did a lengthy interview with our Brian Fisher, very friendly, very sweet, and then went back and did a complete hit piece on him. So that's what we're dealing with. I'm used to that because it's happened to me many times since I've been in public service. I just did an interview with a Washington Post reporter a couple of days ago. We'll see how that goes. But I had a great conversation with him. We'll see if he prints what I said. Probably not. It would be the unusual thing if he did. That's the way this works. And so we've got Avenatti saying there was a sort of a Kavanaugh and Judge were targeting women and trying to drug them and set up gang rapes. Okay. And then we've got another story coming out. This is a classmate whose name is Ramirez. And she claims, I got to word this carefully. I'm going to read just little snippets, okay, because I've got several accounts here. Still another male classmate who Ramirez claimed egged on Kavanaugh to expose himself to her denied any memory of the party in question. In addition, the magazine published a statement by six of Kavanaugh's classmates saying, "We can say with confidence that if the incident Debbie Ramirez alleges ever occurred, we would have seen or heard about it, and we did not. The behavior she describes would be completely out of character for Brett. In addition, some of us knew Debbie long after Yale, and she never described this incident until Brett's Supreme Court nomination was pending." A female classmate of Debbie Ramirez and Brett Kavanaugh, who signed the statement, told The New Yorker that Ramirez is a woman I was best friends with. We shared intimate details of our lives, and I was never told this story by her or by anyone else. It never came up. I didn't see it. I never heard of it happening. Well, what is the story? Here's the story. The claim dates to 1983-84, academic year, when Kavanaugh was a freshman at Yale. The offices of at least four Democratic senators have received information about the allegation, and at least two have been investigating it. Senior Republican staffers also learned of the allegation last week, and in conversations with The New Yorker, expressed concern about its potential impact on Kavanaugh's nomination. Soon after, Senate Republicans issued renewed calls to accelerate the timing of a committee vote. But the Democrats say, I'm reading, this is from The New Yorker. This is another serious, credible, and disturbing allegation against Brett Kavanaugh. It should be fully investigated. Senator Mazie Hirono said, an aide in one of the other Senate offices added, these allegations seem credible and we're taking them very seriously. The woman at the center of the story, Deborah Ramirez, 53, attended Yale with Kavanaugh, where she studied sociology and psychology. Later, she spent years working for an organization that supports victims of domestic violence. The New Yorker contacted Ramirez after learning of her possible involvement in the incident. The allegation was conveyed to Democratic senators. For Ramirez, the sudden attention has been unwelcome and prompted difficult choices. That's what they always say. The women are the victims, you see. They decide to come out after 34 years with things they can't quite remember about stuff they're not sure about, and they are the victims. It's just amazing to me, but I go on. The New Yorker. She was at first hesitant to speak publicly, partly because her memories contain gaps, because she had been drinking at the time of the alleged incident. In her initial conversations with The New Yorker, she was reluctant to characterize Kavanaugh's role in the alleged incident with certainty. After six days of carefully assessing her memories and consulting with her attorney, Ramirez said that she felt confident enough of her recollections to say that she remembers Kavanaugh had exposed himself at a drunken dormitory party. I can't read the rest of this to you. He did, and caused her to blank without her consent as she pushed him away. Ramirez is now calling for the FBI to investigate. I'm sorry I'm laughing because the FBI, honestly, do you ever, any of you have any like sexual encounters, near sexual groping when you were a teenager? Anything happened like that to you? You think the FBI could investigate that? Really? I'm just, the ridiculousness of this. I would think an FBI investigation, she said, would be warranted, but of course she's so hesitant to come forward. In Kavanaugh's statement, he said, this alleged event from 35 years ago did not happen. The people who knew me then know that this did not happen and have said so. This is a smear, plain and simple. I look forward to testifying on Thursday about the truth and defending my good name and the reputation for character and integrity I've spent a lifetime building against these last-minute accusations. This is a tweet from Guy Benson. The New York Times also reports this. Here's an interesting thing about Ramirez. The Times had interviewed several dozen people over the past week in an attempt to corroborate her story, meaning Ramirez, and could find no one with firsthand knowledge. Ms. Ramirez herself contacted former Yale classmates asking if they recalled the incident and told some of them that she could not be certain Mr. Kavanaugh was the one who exposed himself. Yet after 6 days of thinking about it, she's decided absolutely it is him, no question about it. This is what we're dealing with, folks. So last night, Dianne Feinstein sent off a letter to Chuck Grassley asking for a delay. I'm writing with information. No, that's the wrong letter. I am writing to request an immediate postponement of any further proceedings related to the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh. And it goes on and on. Today, Debbie Ramirez came forward with a serious allegation. And just a few sentences from her letter to Senator Grassley. All right, so just interestingly, too, when we look at Deborah Katz, who was one of the two attorneys appointed by the first accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, some interesting things have come out. First, let me play this clip. This is Deborah Katz characterizing Christine Blasey Ford's story. And let's listen to Deborah Katz 2018. This is clip 9.
She clearly considers this an attempted rape. She believes that if it were not for the severe intoxication of Kavanaugh, she would have been raped.
Yeah, so that's Deborah Katz, the attorney. Yes, she believes that, blah, blah. Okay, so but the trouble is now a video has come forward, and this takes us back to right after Jeff Sessions was nominated for attorney general. And the left was apoplectic because they knew Senator Sessions would be a problem for them. And so outside the hearing room, there was a gathering of leftists and resistors. And guess who was there? So this is Deborah Katz. It's a very short clip, so I just want you to listen very carefully. Here it is.
We're going to fight that. We are going to resist. We will not be silenced.
We're going to fight this. We are going to resist. Let's play that one more time.
We're going to fight that. We are going to resist. We will not be silent.
We are going to resist. We will not be silent. That's Deborah Katz in the wake of the nomination, the confirmation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. But it wasn't just that. She's on camera wearing a particular shirt. And that particular shirt has a fist and a few. It is actually a radical socialist power fist T-shirt. It's worn by radical socialists. Deborah Katz, the radical socialist with the wild eyes, who is the attorney now for Christine Blasey Ford, who, of course, has had all her social media scrubs, so we're not quite sure. We do know some things. We know that she's supported a lot of Democratic candidates, including Mrs. Clinton. She's given substantially, and also, I think, to the DNC. And so her attorney is this resistor. We're going to resist. In fact, let's listen to clip 8 one more time.
We're going to fight that. We are going to resist. We will not be silent.
Radical socialist Deborah Katz, now the attorney for, it started last week. She was the attorney right away for Christine Blasey Ford. Wonder how that connection was made. Isn't it interesting? Now, some have said, now I've heard from one source, and I'm just telling you, I've not been able to confirm this, but the source that told me is pretty reliable, that this Deborah Katz is actually a vice president of one of the Soros organizations. There are so many, they're hard to keep up with. And I don't doubt that because you know that Soros money was being handed out hand over fist to the protesters who were protesting Judge Kavanaugh's hearing. Some of them, they were getting paid to get arrested or to get thrown out of the courtroom. And so it's pretty amazing what we see happening here. By the way, we'll put this article on our Facebook page. It's from Gateway Pundit, and it shows Christine Ford, wild-eyed Christine Ford, the attorney Deborah Katz, with her socialist T-shirt on, which kind of puts this whole thing in perspective. Lindsey Graham was again on Fox yesterday, and Chris Wallace asked him, how could he possibly be, can he still be, open-minded to Christine Ford's accusations? And this is clip 5.
I want to listen to her, but I'm being honest with you and everybody else. What do you expect me to do? You can't bring it in a criminal court. You would never sue civilly. You couldn't even get a warrant. What am I supposed to do? Go ahead and ruin this guy's life based on an accusation. I don't know when it happened. I don't know where it happened. And everybody named in regard to being there said it didn't happen. I'm just being honest. Unless there's something more, no, I'm not going to ruin Judge Kavanaugh's life over this. But she should come forward. She should have her say. She will be respectfully treated. What did you expect us to do with an anonymous letter to begin with? What do you expect somebody to do with an accusation this vague, not verified in any way? Bring it forward. I will listen.
But I'm going to interrupt. I hear what he's saying, but I have to tell you that the New Yorker has just, we just see an announcement that Deborah Ramirez was the winner of the 2003 Soros Justice Fellowship. The latest accuser winner of the 2003 Soros Justice Fellowship.
Just an ordinary giant slayer. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. David's battle with Goliath is an epic drama where the little boy stands in God's power to conquer the Philistine giant. David didn't awaken that morning expecting to slay a giant. He didn't stroll in with an entourage after a rugged mountain range training camp like Rocky and Rocky IV. He was just a regular kid bringing his brothers lunch, but fully confident in God's immeasurable power. Though he saw Goliath, David never acknowledged him as a giant, saying, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine who dared defy the Lord of hosts?" When regular people are fully persuaded, fully confident in God's power, giants fall.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Catholic Church in Pennsylvania is reeling from a massive scandal involving priests sexually abusing children. The grand jury found at least 1,000 victims over the last 70 years. The source of this scandal goes back to the early 1960s when the church struggled to recruit priests because of the celibacy requirement. So the church began admitting homosexuals into their seminary since they had no interest in marriage. The results have been entirely predictable. There are two takeaways here. One, the link between homosexuality and pedophilia is now impossible to dismiss. And two, many of our Catholic friends are calling for the church to admit married men into the priesthood. They're right. Peter, the first pope, was married, so there is no reason priests today shouldn't be free to imitate his example.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit afa.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The political warfare being waged against Brett Kavanaugh is entering a sordid and potentially decisive phase. Those opposed to the judge's appointment to the Supreme Court have exploited undocumented allegations of sexual abuse by a woman he knew in high school to delay a vote on his nomination. They're both supposed to testify on Thursday. Meanwhile, and predictably, more unproven charges of such misconduct are being leveled against Judge Kavanaugh. They too will be seized upon to run out the clock. The time thus bought will likely enable Senate and other leftists to intensify their serial character assassination of a man with a long and honorable record of public service. Expect vociferous and perhaps violent disruptions of the Senate's deliberations that will make the spectacle of the initial Kavanaugh hearings seem tame by comparison. That's wrong. It must be thwarted. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, I want to go back to what I was just saying to you before we took the break, because this is so important. Yes, Deborah Katz is involved with the Open Society Foundation, which is a George Soros organization. She is the attorney, of course, for Christine Blasey Ford. Now, but here's the other story. I told you my inbox is a busy little place. This is a story that just came into it. And that is that the Open Society Institute announced that people are looking for information on everyone. So now we know that Deborah Ramirez, the accuser now, who after 6 days of just thinking about it, decided that Brett Kavanaugh was the one who exposed himself to her at a party at Yale during his freshman year. And that's the reason Dianne Feinstein now says we just must delay this hearing. This is ridiculous. Well, it is kind of ridiculous. No one in Ramirez's orbit remembers this. None of them. No one have corroborated. No one has corroborated this from her Yale class, including her good friends, who say, if that were true, she would have told me. But suddenly, she's had this memory, you see. After 6 days of deliberating with her attorneys, she suddenly remembers for certain. Well, now we see that Deborah Ramirez was awarded the 2003 Soros Justice Fellowship. That's George Soros, Hungarian radical leftist communist whose father was a, George Soros is a Jew, his dad is a Jew, his father was a collaborator with the Nazis. That's the nature of the family. So George Soros has spent billions and continues to spend billions. He's an American citizen now, and he doesn't hide it. He wants to destroy the foundations of this country. He is fueling and funding almost every radical thing you see on the streets and behind the scenes. Okay, so Deborah Ramirez, the latest accuser of Judge Kavanaugh, just happens to be a 2003 Soros Justice Fellowship winner. Here's the announcement. Deborah Ramirez, Boston, Massachusetts, professor at the Northeastern University College of Law and co-director of the Northeastern University's Institute on Race and Justice to strengthen understanding between law enforcement and the Arab, Muslim, and Sikh communities. And the winners, it states, receive 1 and 2 year stipends ranging from $35,000 to $98,000. Since Ramirez was at the highest category, it's likely she received the highest award. So that's the way this goes, ladies and gentlemen. And meanwhile, the public hears little bits of this, and then they are polled, and the Fox poll shows what we said earlier, that most people don't think Brett Kavanaugh should be confirmed, because after all, look at this, all these women coming out. We've got Ronan Farrow coming out with another story. We've got Michael Avenatti coming out. He knows someone too. You see, this is the way it works. It's the way it worked with Justice Moore, and it's the way it's working with Brett Kavanaugh. Now, I want to change the subject because there's another big story that broke last week that I did not get a chance to talk to you at any length. So let's take a breath. We have lots of time. I'll open the phone lines maybe tomorrow if there isn't a ton more things I need to share with you and let you talk about it, because I'm really interested to know, you know, what you're hearing and what you're seeing and what you're feeling about how the effect of this information on your neighbors and friends and on you too. But not in this moment, because I want to tell you next about what happened with Rod Rosenstein last week. The New York Times came out with this bomb, I guess you could call it a bomb. Kevin Cork was on Fox News Friday special report. Let's listen to his telling of this.
Citing anonymous sources, the New York Times reports that in the spring of 2017, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein contemplated secretly recording the president in an effort to prove his unfitness for office, and furthermore, discussed recruiting cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Mr. Trump from office. Perhaps anticipating suggestions that Rosenstein might claim to have been kidding, the Times, citing sources, confirmed that Rosenstein was in fact serious, and even followed up by suggesting other FBI officials could also secretly record Mr. Trump. In a terse statement, Rosenstein denied the allegation, calling the Times story inaccurate and factually incorrect, adding that based on his personal dealings with the president, there was, quote, no basis to invoke the 25th Amendment. Section 4 of the 25th Amendment of the Constitution spells out in detail the process by which a president could be removed from office. It's multi-layered and would require congressional action. The timing of the alleged comment by Rosenstein is relevant, according to the Times.
He was not doing a good job.
As it came shortly after the president fired then-FBI Director James Comey. Rosenstein, just 2 weeks into his job, had begun overseeing the Russia investigation and wrote a scathing memo critical of Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. While the White House has so far refused to comment on the story, the president's son, Don Jr., took to Twitter, writing, shocked, absolutely shocked. Oh, who are we kidding at this point? No one is shocked that these guys would do anything in their power to undermine real Donald Trump. Already, Democrats, worried that this could lead to Rosenstein's firing, are calling for calm. New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer said in a statement, this story must not be used as a pretext for the corrupt purpose of firing Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein in order to install an official who will allow the president to interfere with the special counsel's investigation.
This is so twisted. Sandy Rios back with you. Now, here's the thing. Andy McCarthy has a great article on this morning, and we'll put that on our Facebook page. It's called Rod Rosenstein's Resistance. And Andy says this: weasel words, weasel moves from an emotionally overwrought deputy AG eager to ingratiate himself with Democrats. Basically, what happened was that Rod Rosenstein, according to my reading, was very careful. Most Washington bureaucrats are. They play both sides. And Rod Rosenstein was very eager to ingratiate himself to Democrats. A lot of his relationships, I don't know what his party affiliation is, but he likes to play it down the middle because he wants to be, you know, there forever, doing nothing but pleasing everyone. And so he thought the Democrats, according to Andy's take on this and others too, Rod Rosenstein thought the Democrats would be really happy that he got Comey fired because they were mad at Comey for what they feel he harmed Hillary Clinton. They blame him for her not becoming president because of the way he handled the investigation into her email, etc. So Rosenstein volunteered to write the memo. So he writes the memo, and then President Trump comes out and cites the memo as the reason that he's firing James Comey. And so then the Democrats, unbeknownst to Rod Rosenstein, had suddenly formed this great affection for James Comey because he had suddenly come to their side. They realized he was like their good buddy after all. And so, but Rosenstein didn't get that memo, and he thought he was doing something really good for the left by writing the memo criticizing Comey. So Comey gets fired, and then the Democrats are furious with Rosenstein. Then Rosenstein is very emotional and upset. They describe it in the New York Times memo that he's overwrought. I can't find the words right now, but he basically is very emotional. That's why Andy refers to him as emotionally overwrought. So he starts talking about, you know, getting people to wear a wire, including Andy McCabe, including members of the cabinet. He thinks that they should try to invoke the 25th Amendment, which, by the way, has to do with illness, when a president can't serve because of illness, and they're, you know, the idea was to declare Trump mentally ill and then take away his power. And then when this comes out from the New York Times, Rod Rosenstein rushes to write two responses in which he does not really deny the substance. He just makes lawyerly disclaimers like, I've worked with this president many times and the 25th Amendment is not warranted and no one can say I pursued that or whatever. But it looks like the information from this came from memos written by Andrew McCabe and others. As I understand it, there are other sources as well. But Andrew McCabe's notes are pretty meticulous, and he records this. Isn't it ironic? See, Rod Rosenstein, according to what I've read, wanted Andrew McCabe to wear a wire. And this, and then you remember, 24 hours later, Rod Rosenstein, after Comey is fired, he appoints Bob Mueller. I'm sorry, you know I laugh when it's not appropriate, so you have to forgive me. I can't help it. It's just it's just such a bizarre tale, except that it's true. So Rod Rosenstein hurries up and he nominates Bob Mueller to be special counsel, and as a way of kind of protecting his own tush, to the Democrats, he says, basically, wink and a nod, I'm not going to restrict him in any way. He's free to do anything he wants. So he didn't restrict the investigation. That's why Bob Mueller has been out of control in his investigations and sending people to prison and jail for things completely unrelated to this and threatening people and ruining their lives. So, but Rod Rosenstein now may be in trouble. And many people believe that the reason that the New York Times came out with this is that they want President Trump to fire Rod Rosenstein because that might be a reason to go after the president on obstruction of justice. And, you know, when you look at the Republicans in charge in the Senate and you think about who's deciding these things, you can understand why that's possible. Because these men are not trustworthy with their power. We have entrusted them in ways we never should have. You know, Matt Bevin spoke at the Family Research for the Values Voter Summit. And he was just terrific. He is now the governor of Kentucky, and you might have heard his name before because Matt Bevin ran against Mitch McConnell in the Republican primary when Mitch McConnell last ran. I was a big fan, by the way, but to no avail because the people of Kentucky, they liked their Mitch McConnell, and so they got Mitch McConnell again. Meanwhile, Matt Bevin, who could have been in that seat doing a lot of different things, and Mitch McConnell could have been back home in Kentucky enjoying his horses, You see how this works. That's why with 2018 coming, again, I just pray that you are motivated to do something. You may not be able to vote for the candidate that you love. Politics is not a perfect thing. It's not like voting for a church elder. This is something we have to just make the best judgment about that we can. But not voting would just be detrimental because so much is at stake. And when you can, if you don't have a good candidate in your state, look at another state. There's some really fine candidates running right now who deserve your support. Financial, you can make phone calls for them. You can do all kinds of things for candidates. You're not limited to your own state. But I did digress quite a bit again, as usual. This is the article I really want to get to, and I want to read as much of it as I can to you. This is written by Thomas Lifson, and it's called 12 Points to Keep in Mind on the New York Times Rosenstein Wear a Wire and Invoke 25th Amendment Story. Now, we're going to put this on our Facebook page because I may not have a chance to get through a lot of this, but here it is. He says, Thomas Lifson said the New York Times lobbed a hand grenade yesterday with its story claiming the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein suggested last year that he secretly record President Trump in the White House to expose the chaos consuming the administration. And he discussed recruiting cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Mr. Trump from office for being unfit. By the way, could I just say is that not treason? He's sworn. He's the Chief Justice Department official since Jeff Sessions has recused himself. Rod Rosenstein is running most everything else. And here he is unconstitutionally, treasonously trying to get rid of the president on his own. It doesn't matter if he went further with that. The fact that he even said it in his position is unforgivable, really. But to move on. Lifson points out that the New York Times is comfortable exposing the deep state resistance to Trump. Remember at first, everybody, oh, that's silly. There's no deep state resistance. No, that you're just making this up. John Brennan wouldn't do a thing like that, and neither would James Clapper, and neither would Rod Rosenstein. None of those guys would do that. The FBI wouldn't do that, etc. Well, now the New York Times has come around. And remember, they published that anonymously written op-ed, somebody in the White House saying he's part of the resistance. And now this story. So NBC News has now been told by a source who was in the room that Rosenstein did indeed discuss wearing a wire on the president, but he did so sarcastically. So that's the defense that some are pushing for Rod Rosenstein. But then the New York Times reporters are coming back saying, no, that is just not true. According to people that we know that were in that room, it was not a joke at all. It was a... Goldman was one of the writers. He said that to Jake Tapper on CNN yesterday. All right, so then Lifson goes on to observe, Rosenstein is also the key figure in the process of releasing the unredacted FISA warrant and text messages. Now, remember that the big story before this one broke last week, besides the Kavanaugh story, was that the president decided not to release those documents. Remember that? The documents that the House members, that Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and Devin Nunes were so intent on him releasing. And so Rod Rosenstein is the one holding those back. And now we know from many sources that there's really nothing, according to people that have read it, nothing in those, including Trey Gowdy, that would put anybody in danger. It's just if they were released, people in the Justice Department, the FBI, would be pretty embarrassed, or maybe kind of like pretty much in trouble if we knew what they were really saying behind the scenes. We know now that email between Lisa Page and Peter Strzok were not even handed over to the Inspector General, some that were even more incriminating. You see how this goes? This is interesting, and we need to pray that the truth will be revealed and justice, God's justice, will be done. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.